It's episode 682 of the Locked On Rangers podcast. On today's show, I'm breaking down a solid win for the Rangers over the Angels in the fight for third place in the AL West, and Evan Carter winning Baseball America's Rangers Minor League Player of the Year, and what that does for his stock and where he should be on the updated rankings. All that and more on this episode of Locked On Rangers. Let's get into it.
You are Locked On Rangers, your daily Texas Rangers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are locked onto the Texas Rangers. I'm Bryce Patrick, a cripplingly addicted Texas Rangers fan since 2010. The founder and host for all four seasons of this Locked On Rangers podcast. Today is Thursday, September 22nd. Your Rangers are 64-84 officially, already several games better than they were last year. So, it's an improvement. Thank you all so much for making Locked On Rangers your first listen every single day. If you're not already, you can follow me on Twitter at Bryce Patrick. You can follow the show at Locked On Rangers and subscribe on YouTube, where the best way you can help grow the show is to comment any single thing below. Let's get into this 7-2 win by the Rangers. It was a solid, unspectacular, but still a nice win for the Rangers to have. Every game they have at this point is at least one win better than they were last year. If they get to the 10 wins better than they were mark than last year, then I will consider this season a success. Despite the frustration of last year, they're already 60 wins is the plateau. 60 wins, they're not going to have 100 losses, so that's an improvement right there, at least two games better. And, you know, we're all for small improvements. It's going to take time, and there was a lot of frustration that it wasn't immediate this year, but this was a solid win. On display were some of the reasons why the Rangers are much better than last year, including Corey Seager and Nathaniel Lowe, each doing their part offensively, a double for each of them. Seager's 22nd, Lowe's 25th. Lowe also reached base with a walk. His OPS is now all the way up to 866, which is by far the best on the team, and just another sign that he has been the most complete, most consistent Rangers hitter this season. It's not a thing that I thought I'd say when you add Marcus Semien and you add Corey Seager as well, that Nathaniel Lowe would be the Rangers pretty much most consistent, if not best, overall offensive player this year. But that's something that you can say. His average is back to 308, which it was at the start of Tuesday's game. And it's been around there for a couple weeks. Every time I look up, it ends up being right around 308. It's still fifth place. It's tied with Jose Abreu. I don't think that he's going to catch Judge and Bogarts. Aaron Judge is up to 317. Both of those guys are tied at 317. Judge and Bogarts, that is, leading the American League in the batting title chase. I don't think he's going to get there, but it's still a very, very solid season for him. He is also, Nathaniel Lowe, that is, in the top 10 of OPS on the year at 865. He is just ahead of Xander Bogarts and Jimenez, the second baseman for Cleveland. I believe his first name is Andres. And behind Jose Ramirez, that is, of the Cleveland Guardians, who is in seventh place. So overall, really excellent offensive season for Nathaniel Lowe, no matter how you slice it. But the rest of this offense was also working as well. A multi-hit game for Leody Taveras, who scored a run, had a pair of RBIs in this one. Not a great day for Josh Young, had an 0-for-4, another golden sombrero in last night's matchup. And as I'm watching this game in the afternoon, he was robbed of his first major league walk by a borderline pitch from Lorenzen of the Angels, but he ended up putting that in play and not striking out, so he's not going to have a 4-strikeout game today as I am watching this 3-0 losing effort so far in the bottom of the third inning. But a big day for Josh Smith, who had an RBI weird ground out. He hit the ball, they were in the shift, but had to keep a third baseman over there to hold Leody, who ended up tying as the scoring run. He hit the ball right to the shortstop, Josh Smith, that is, and he tried to throw out Leody at home. It looked like Leody was going to be out, but the throw wasn't quite good enough. It wasn't handled, and it skirted away from the Angels catcher, and it was just not a great defensive day for them as well. And because that throw got away, Josh was able to get to second base, and he also had his first outside the park home run. He had his first major league home run, which technically it counts as a home run, but it went 280 something feet, less than 300 feet, which is not out of any ballpark, even maybe not even out of a little league ballpark, but it counts as a home run in the stats. This one he's going to feel much better about. He got absolutely all of it, crushed it to right field to give the Rangers some insurance. They scored three runs in that eighth inning. They took a 3-2 lead in the third inning, one run in each of the first, second, and third innings, that was able to get past the two runs that Dane Dunning allowed on that home run by Taylor Ward, his 19th of the season. Dunning was solid if unspectacular, and that's about what you ask for your number five starter. He went five innings in this one, allowed three hits. One of those was the home run, two runs, which were both earned. That was all the runs in the game. Only had one walk, but did strike out eight. That was an important thing that he has been adding this year. His raw stuff isn't anything crazy, so the fact that he's able to get some higher strikeout numbers than I initially anticipated from him has been a nice little bonus. But again, he is pretty much a number five starter. That's what he's going to be. He's going to go out there every day, give you about five innings. Maybe he'll give up, you know, 2-3 runs, and that'll be that. But, you know, that's fine. It's much more, it's basically what the Rangers need right now. The bullpen was able to come in and shut the door very easily. Brock Burke got a two-inning hold where he only allowed one hit. Matt Moore worked around a couple of walks in his one-inning work, also got a pair of strikeouts in a scoreless inning. And Jose Leclerc came on, no drama, pair of strikeouts in his inning to shut it down in the ninth. 13 strikeouts for the Rangers pitching staff on the day, which is a nice, impressive sign, something they have not done super well on the season, but nice to see a little bit of progress there, especially from one of your starters that, again, doesn't have the most strikeout-heavy stuff, but still a really solid day overall. Coming up, we're going to get into a little bit of a look at Dane Dunning, why his stuff is getting more strikeouts than it initially looked, despite not a whole lot of velocity on the fastball. And we're going to talk about Evan Carter and the great season he has had so far. But first, this episode is brought to you by Nugenix. You know, getting older is hard. Getting older is really hard. It does not nice things to your body. You know, it'll make you not want to work out. It makes it harder to work out. And even when you do, you feel like you're not making nearly as much progress as you were when you were young. It's much more difficult to stay in shape, but you know, it's not your fault. As men age, our bodies naturally lose free testosterone, the man hormone, if you will. It happens every man. It can make it more difficult to stay in shape and be energetic and active. You want more energy to counter the negative physical effects of aging? Nugenix Total T Testosterone Booster with Testosterone will help you get back, turn back the clock, re-energize your workouts, get you better results at the gym, and help you look and feel like the man you really want to be. Nugenix Total T contains man-boosting key ingredients like testosterone and has been validated in five clinical studies shown to boost free testosterone levels in men. Because Nugenix Total T boosts free testosterone that the aging process robs you of, you feel stronger, leaner, with more energy and drive, and more passion too. Your partner will notice the difference. Nugenix Total T is the number one selling testosterone booster at GNC. Nugenix Total T can help you re-energize your life and get back the powerful, confident, good-looking warrior you used to be. Now, get a complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T when you text MLB to 231-231. Text now and get a bottle of Nugenix Thermo, their most powerful fat incinerator ever, with key ingredients to help you get back into shape fast, absolutely free. Text MLB to 231-231. Text MLB 231-231. Message and data rates may apply. Terms apply. Available at Nugenix.com/terms. Now, let's look at Dane Dunning and the rest of this rotation. Again, I have talked about him being a solid, if unspectacular. Let's look into the baseball savant numbers. There's not a whole lot of red on here, a lot of blue. The fastball velocity in the bottom 6th percentile, and the spin rate is not very high as well, but he's throwing a whole lot of sinkers as well, so that's kind of something that you want. That's absolutely something that you want. If you have a higher spin rate on the two-seamer, on that sinker, it's not going to move as much. It's going to be easier to hit. And yeah, that's kind of what you want from your two-seamers and your changeups. You don't want the high spin rate on four-seamers and breaking balls like sliders and curveballs. You want the higher spin rate because that means the pitches will move more. It's kind of weird and counterintuitive, but that's just the way baseball go. It's weird and counterintuitive sometimes. His average exit velocity is in the top half of baseball, 65th percentile. No one's hitting him really that hard. He's right around middle of the pack when it comes to that. Expected slugging and barrel weight, though, are pretty darn low. Expected ERA as well. Both of those are in the bottom quarter of baseball. The walk rate, that's the thing I think that's holding him back the most. One of the things that impressed me from this outing is that he did not have nearly as many walks as he had as of late. Only one walk in this one, but he's had multiple walks in three out of his four September starts. He had three September 4th, he had three September 14th, and a pair against Toronto when he went 5 2/3 innings there. That has been a thing that has really plagued him this year. And when you have stuff that's not, you know, world beating, you cannot afford, when you're a pitchability guy, you cannot afford to give away those free passes. It is dangerous when you start giving away those free passes, because then when you do what the occasional hard contact, when you are a ground ball pitcher, when those balls, you know, sneak through, there's more base runners on that are going to score a lot more runs. And also it's harder to get further into the game when you are getting walks as opposed to outs. That's just how baseball literally works. So I think that's something that I am concerned about with him. I was a little bit concerned about it the last couple years. He's up a little bit from his walk rate from last year. Last year, he was at 3.3 walks per nine. The year before, in seven starts with Chicago in 2020, at 3.4. And this year, he is up to 3.6. So that is just a little bit higher. The strikeout rate is also down a little bit from last year, 8 strikeouts per nine versus 8.7 the year before. But one of the things that helps him to get these strikeouts with a fastball that averages 90 miles an hour and not some crazy splitter or slider or changeup or cutter or the other pitches that he throws, is his extension rate. He's 6'4" and he is in the top, he is in the 77th percentile for extension rate. Now, what that means is how far he travels down the mound, how close the baseball physically is when it leaves his hand. So that is when people on the broadcast or just in baseball in general talk about a fastball playing up like 90 miles an hour looks like 95, or this looks, you know, faster than it is. Two of the things that help that are the spin rate and the extension. Now, he is getting some great extension where Cole Reagans, who is also really tall, is not getting nearly as great of extension as him. I'm not exactly sure. If I have to talk to Grant or some more pitching experts about if that's something that can be fixed. His extension, in terms of Cole Reagans, is in the 25th percentile, but he is also 6'4". Not quite as big, not quite as heavy as Dane Dunning, a little bit skinnier Cole Reagans is, but Dunning is able to get down that mound and use that whole 6'4 frame. That's a lot of the reason why people stereotypically like the tall pitchers. Usually it's one of two things. It's they have the body, their frame can physically support throwing 200 innings, throwing, you know, 180 innings, whatever. It's theoretically it breaks down less. It can handle that big workload, which I don't exactly understand, and I'm not entirely sure how accurate that is, but that is the stereotype, and it has existed for years. Baseball scouts know a lot more about baseball than me, so we'll go with that. But it's also because of this extension. Some guys who are a little bit shorter, they don't get as far off the mound, or some tall guys like we see with Cole Reagans don't have the greatest extension and can't go as far, but some guys who are like, say, 6 foot or 5'10 or whatever can get down the mound a little bit, sometimes even more than those guys who are 6 foot. It all just kind of depends on the pitcher, and that is something that Dane Dunning has been able to use to his advantage. His chase rate is also pretty high in terms of compared to his strikeout rate and some of the other number, his whiff rate as well. His chase rate is in the 60th percentile, but the whiff rate is in the 40th, and the K rate is in the 35th. That means they are chasing his pitches out of the zone, but they are not swinging and missing at them. They are able to foul off a lot of his pitches out of the zone, which getting them to chase is good. That is a step one in the right direction. But if they're not swinging and missing at it, then it's not quite as effective, not what you're trying to do when you throw pitches outside of the zone. But let's look at what it comes to him versus everybody else in this rotation. I do think he is right now, he's pretty clearly a number three. His walk rate isn't quite as bad as Glenn Otto's. Glenn Otto is at 4.4 walks per nine innings, and Martin Perez and John Gray are both below that 3 walks per 9 that I kind of feel like is a pretty good barometer for what's a solid, if acceptable, rate for walks for a starting pitcher. And if we look all the way down to, where'd we go? Cole Reagans, who is at 4.2 walks per 9. That rate is coming down. That is encouraging. And it's now below Glenn Otto's, which is also a very, very encouraging sign. In terms of that last spot in the Ranger rotation, I think they've got to add 2 starting pitchers. That's assuming they also bring back Martin Perez. Like, Perez and John Gray are pretty much the only... Well, even Perez at this point, they haven't locked down that contract. I feel pretty confident that they will. I don't know exactly what the terms will be, but I'm feeling pretty confident that that deal will get done. It will happen eventually, and they're going to have their number one and number two. Or, you know, if they can go get somebody splashy on the market, then maybe their number two and their number three. If they can go get somebody who is better than Martin Perez and John Gray, then that would be ideal. That would be amazing. Not that those guys can't be a number one and two in a team that's competing for the playoffs rotation, but I think you'd be a little bit safer with someone a little bit splashier. So you can, if you can get, what I'm basically trying to say is if you can get a Jacob deGrom, you should absolutely go get a Jacob deGrom. Now, can they? I don't know, but I'm sure they are definitely going to try for it. Coming up, we're going to look at Evan Carter, and we are going to look at his great season and talk a little bit more about Dane Dunning. But first, this word from our sponsors. Now, Dane Dunning, of these three guys that are in the back end of the Rangers rotation right now, Glenn Otto, Dane Dunning, and Cole Reagans, I think Dane Dunning's most solid backbone of his argument for a spot in the rotation is that he has done it before. He has been that consistent number 5 starter in the rotation. He's got an 89 ERA plus, so he's, you know, about 10% worse than league average. If he could get that down to, or up, the ERA plus up to about 100, be just about an average pitcher, that would be ideal for a number 5. You don't always get that, but I think his track record of just being healthy, being able to give you 5-6 innings, and, you know, sometimes he'll have that, you know, 7-inning start where he'll go 7 innings and allow like 2 base runners and not allow any runs. He's done that before. He did that, I believe it was against the White Sox this year, and one of his most impressive starts of the season. And he's had some other really great starts out of, you know, randomly as well. Not as many lately, but he has had quite a few where he has done fairly well. So I think he has got the edge right now in the rotation in terms of upside. This is about what Dane Dunning is. He might get a little bit better. He can limit that walk rate. Then I think his ERA will come down just a bit, but I don't think he's going to be a, you know, sub 350 ERA guy. I think he might get below 4. If you can get that, that's about what you want for your number 5. Reagans, I think his ceiling is a little bit higher. His stuff is also, the fastball is not quite as crazy, but the spin rate on Reagans' fastball, if you can get a little bit more extension on that, the velocity is in the 18th percentile. Cole Reagans, that is, his fastball velo is in the 18th percentile, but his fastball spin rate is in the 89th percentile. So he doesn't get his swings and misses with the extension, he gets them with the spin rate. And if he can add some extension, I don't know if that's something that you can add, but I would think so, being 6'4", if he can get down the mound just a little bit more and, you know, raise that up to, say, like the 40th percentile. Not anything crazy, like in the top 10% or whatever, but like just get down the mound just a little bit more, and that spin rate and will make both of those things combined will make that fastball sitting at 92 look way, way, way faster. It already does look faster with the spin rate, but still, it's going to be harder to track for those opposing hitters. I think eventually Cole Reagans might supplant him in this rotation, but Dane Dunning, that is, but I don't think it's going to be next year. It might be by the end of the year, but it's definitely not going to be out of camp. I could see them sending Cole Reagans probably back to AAA, get a little bit more seasoning in him, a little bit more starts, because he has missed some significant time, just getting him some more reps pitching and making sure he's all healthy. It's another thing that's been really impressive about Cole Reagans this year, is that because he missed all that time with those 2 Tommy John surgeries, the fact that he's been able to pitch as much as he has this year has been just a really nice thing for him. He's at 30 innings so far in the big leagues. You pair that with what he has done in the minor leagues this year, and he's got just a little bit more. Let's see, 18 starts, 94 and 2/3 innings at the minor league level between AA and AAA this year. Encouraging stuff for him. Now, Speaking of minor leaguers, I want to talk about the Rangers Minor League Player of the Year, according to Baseball America. That is second round pick from 2020 draft. That is, of course, Evan Carter, who had a fantastic regular season. And I was a little gun-shy moving him up the rankings as high as I should have. I don't think I moved him up that much. I might have had him. I have him at 6 in my midseason rankings. I can't remember where I had him before the season. I think it was definitely in the top 10, but it was probably a little bit lower than that. I had him in this midseason below Cole Wynn and Owen White and Ezekiel Duran. Duran is no longer on that list, so by default, Carter moves up to at least 5. I might put him at 1. I think I'm probably going to put him ahead of Jack Leiter. That may sound a little sacrilegious, but, you know, call me for reacting too quickly to what I've seen for this entire season. It's been a little bit of a rough one for Jack Leiter. I still think he's going to be a pretty darn good big league pitcher, but that walk rate has been worrisome and has not gotten a whole lot better throughout the season. Yes, he's found his curveball, but still. This is a great season for Evan Carter. He's 20, now in Double-A, just turned 20. He's going to have a full season of being 20 in Double-A next year. And we'll see how aggressively they push him. This is his first mid-season promotion. He's only had 2 minor league seasons in his minor league career. But last year he just stayed at down east for the entire season, only 32 games, had that back injury, and that was a bit of a scare. One of the encouraging things for him this year is that, okay, you thought, okay, that was one of the reasons that I didn't put him higher up, is because, oh, he is a teenager and already had a back injury. That's a little worrisome. That's a little questionable and something to keep an eye on. But everything we saw there in only 32 games, excuse me, was encouraging. He had an on base in the high 430s. He had 6 more walks than strikeouts in 146 plate appearances, showed a little bit of power, not a whole lot, but definitely was some room to grow there. He was 18 years old, so he's still growing into his adult body, which at 6'4", he's got some room on his frame to put some meat on the bone and put the ball over the fence, which he did a lot more of this year. He had 100 games exactly at Hickory, and in the regular season, he had 6 games with Frisco. In those two levels combined, Baseball Reference is not showing the playoff stats, but he did have an RBI in their Game 1 win, Frisco's Game 1 win over San Antonio. For the year, he had an 885 OPS, and on base just 3 points below 400, slugged 489. He had 21 doubles, 10 triples, and 12 home runs. He played almost exclusively center field, a little bit of left field, a little bit in the right field, but for the most part, he is playing center field. 74 games there, did DH for 18, 6 in right field, and let's see, how many in left? 8 in left field. So, again, mostly a center fielder, might end up being the Rangers' long-term center fielder of the future. Maybe he'll end up in left field because he's not quite as good defensively as Leody Taveras. That's no knock on Evan Carter. Leody Taveras is just freaking exceptional defensively. And you could get a little bit more power in that left field spot, which you're not currently getting with Bubba Thompson or Josh Smith, who I believe is playing there today, did play there last night, which no knock on them. No knock on them at all, but Evan Carter, I think, brings a lot more offensively to the table. He doesn't have the crazy burner wheels, Bubba Thompson. Then again, nobody does. He doesn't have the defensive versatility of Josh Smith. That's fine. Overall, offensively, he's going to be an outfielder. He's going to be a darn good one. Maybe he ends up in right field. Maybe he ends up in left field. But that guy is going to play every day in the big leagues. He is fantastic, and his health. The only concern that he had was a little bit of a foot injury that kept him out for a couple weeks towards the end of the season. But he came back from it, didn't miss all that much time, still got 475 plate appearances this season. And, really, really encouraging. Oh, and if you care about batting average, he was hitting .295 for the season. If you look at Frisco, he was hitting .429 and on base of .536. And let's see, he did not quite get that more walks than strikeouts than he did in his first pro season at either level, actually. 6 strikeouts to 5 walks in Frisco in those 6 games, and 75 strikeouts to 59 walks, which, yeah, you'll live with. You'll absolutely live with. And he was really aggressive on the base paths as well. 28 stolen bases to 13 times caught stealing. Did get caught a little bit more than I would have liked. Not exactly the rate that I would have wanted. I think about 75% is when you see that being about the benchmark for stealing. If you're not stealing, if you're not successful on, you know, 3 out of your 4 attempts, if it's less than that, then you should probably stop stealing so many bases because you're just giving away outs that you really don't need to on the base pass. But long term, I think this is a guy who can have, you know, an on base in that 360, 380 range, somewhere in that elite mark. I'm not exactly sure about the power potential. He's obviously showing a little bit of it, and he's still really young. He literally just turned 20 years old in August, one of the last days of August as well. And the Rangers were so smart to go get him, to go find him in Elizabethan, Tennessee, out of Elizabethan High School as well. Not a whole lot of scouting done in that 2020 season. Really seemed to have a growth spurt, kind of figure everything out in his senior year. The Rangers found him, scouted him, out-scouted everybody. He was not on a lot of draft boards that go like 500 players deep. I believe it was Baseball America that did not have them on their draft board, and everyone's like, they're celebrating this guy and getting that TK Roby and Thomas Sagisi. Like, that 2020 class is looking really, really strong. Foscue is okay. I still don't love that as the first round pick, but still, if that's, well, the fourth round pick isn't quite panning out at this moment, but if Foscue is one of your worst 2 draft picks in a class of 5, you have a really, really good draft. Evan Carter has the highest ceiling of any position player in the Rangers system that is in full season ball, stateside. Let's say A ball, because I don't exactly know what the ceiling of some of those complex league guys are, or some of the guys in the Dominican Summer League. They have some crazy high ceilings, but I do think that if he puts it all together and reaches, like, even, you know, the 85th percentile of what he can do, he's going to be a really darn good player, maybe a multi-time all-star. Like, this is, the Rangers have not had a whole lot of players like this in their system. I mean, Nomar Mazara was supposed to be like this if things broke right. He has a lot higher floor than a guy like Lewis Brinson, who had all the tools and everything, and Jorge Alfaro, again, had all the tools, and, you know, he's probably got the highest ceiling of any player since Joey Gallo. And, you know, he was a multi-time all-star, the best homegrown player the Rangers have developed since Mark Sheriff talked about it 18 million different times. But still, the Rangers did really well to draft him in the second round. I do believe he's going to start the season next year at AA. We'll see if he gets another midseason promotion. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that he could make the big leagues at the end of next year. I don't think it's likely, but I'm not going to throw that possibility out entirely. I mean, he's got his feet wet in AA. We'll see how far the Rough Riders go in the playoffs, how many games at AA he ends up getting. In the first 6, he has looked pretty much in control. Same in that playoff game as well. Really wish I could have seen him in person, but, you know, we'll live with what we got. I am really excited about him. At this point, I think I'm putting him at number 2 in my prospect rankings. I think I might end up doing those in January, maybe in November. We'll see how bare the content library is come the off season. But I really think that he has a little bit higher of a ceiling than Josh Jung. And if Josh Jung wasn't already in the big leagues right now, I might honestly have him as my number 1 overall Rangers prospect. He is just that good. The second Josh Jung loses his rookie status, Evan Carter is vaulting into that number 1 spot. But right now, I think I would have him number 2 in my prospect rankings. I have been so encouraged by what this kid has done. Everyone has raved about him since the moment the Rangers drafted him. Remember, he didn't have a first season in the minor leagues. He was drafted in 2020. There was no minor league season then, but he was playing in the complex leagues. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about him maybe being the best player in those, you know, instructional games, whatever they could do with the Rangers minor leaguers, those, you know, simulated games or whatever they could actually get done. The intra-squad games is the word that I was looking for. They were raving about him then. Rangers were so proud then. Then we saw just 30 games last year. I thought, oh man, this guy didn't get hurt. He's jumping up there in some top 100s. I don't know that he is in any top 100 rankings right now, but I wouldn't be surprised. I would actually be surprised if he wasn't in any top 100 rankings at the start of next year, whether that's Baseball Prospectus or Baseball America or MLB Pipeline. Oh, excuse me, I spoke too soon. He is 58 in MLB Pipeline. I wouldn't be surprised if, I should say, if he is top 50 in some of those rankings because the guy has really done some special stuff this year. Doing what he's done at his age is very impressive, and he has got a really, really bright future ahead of him. And the Rangers, they were right to brag about that 2020 draft because it's looking like they got a fantastic pick in the second round. That's going to do it for today's show. On tomorrow's show, I'll be looking ahead at the weekend series. I'm going to be looking at this start by Martin Perez, if the Rangers can end up pulling off a comeback when I am uploading this show. That'll do it for this show. For your next episode, go check out Locked On MLB, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call him Sully. He gives you his unique perspective on the major leagues, both past and present. It is free and available wherever you get your podcast. Thank you all so much for listening. And until next time, don't forget to enjoy baseball.